And it is a very special edition of Movies with Michael Jones, the Boxing Day edition. Morning, Michael. How are you?
Good morning, Danny. A bit weird to be with you on a Friday. My compliments of the season to you. Happy Boxing Day or happy first day of the fourth test. Whatever you choose to celebrate. Five films today, all short enough for you to watch and have a relaxing cup of coffee afterwards whilst the kids are in watching Avatar at 3.5 bloody hours. The first three films are aimed at your more dandy and palace crowd, offering slightly more sophistication, while the last two will play very well in the multiplexes, so you can be next door while the kids are watching Avatar. And thankfully, they're all pretty damn good.
Awesome, that's good.
Let's start with the first one, as we usually
as
do.
As we do, yeah.
Sentimental Value, a Norwegian film starring Stellan Skarsgård from Dune, Renate Rensvay from The Worst Person in the World, Inga Ibsdotter Lilias from A Beautiful Life, and Elle Fanning from Predator Badlands. It's directed by Joachim Trier, no relation to Lars von, who made The Worst Person in the World. Skarsgård plays acclaimed director Gustav Borg, a man who has become estranged from his two adult daughters, Agnes, played by Pettersson, and Nora, played by Rensvay. To try and reconnect, he's written a new film which he wants Nora to star in. Nora doesn't want to because she still resents and pretty much hates him. So he gets American actress Rachel Kemp, played by Fanning, to play the lead role. Tension ensues. Sentimental Value is real Euro arthouse stuff. Family dynamics and intergenerational trauma. Lots of angsty and angry conversations, along with plenty of frustration and self-loathing and the odd flashback sequence with an American stuck in the middle of this family drama. They're Scandinavians, so how much drama can there really be? Plenty, as it turns out. Sentimental Value is worth plenty.
Nice one. What do you got next?
My Brother's Band. This is a French film starring Benjamin Laverne from Jean de Barry, Pierre Lotan from The Stranger. It's directed by Emmanuel Courcol, who made the big hit a few years ago. Famous conductor Tybalt, played by Laverne, finds out that he has a long-lost brother, Jimmy, played by Lotan, when he needs a bone marrow transplant. Jimmy has led a much less privileged life than Tybalt. He's a caterer in a factory, but it turns out that he's also an autodidact with perfect pitch. He has a band at the factory that he works at, but they're struggling, so he asks Tybalt for help. Will their shared love of music be enough for two brothers who have only just met to form a lasting bond? And what will happen to the band if the mine the factory supports closes down? To add to the authenticity, the real-life Wallencourt marching band features in this movie. They must have cringed at the scenes where they're supposed to be playing quite badly, because apparently they're quite good. Maybe the filmmaker is trying a bit too hard to cram too many elements into this movie, but at the heart of this film is the relationship between two brothers. And by the end, My Brother's Band will play your emotions like a tune.
Oh, I like that.
Let's move on to Rental Family, a Japanese film starring Brendan Fraser from Encino Man back in the day. It also stars Takahiro Hira from Shogun, Mari Yamamoto from Monarch Legacy of Monsters, and Shannon McKenna Gorman in her feature film debut. It's written and directed by someone with a single name, Hikari, who's made Beef, which featured on streaming, and a movie called 37 Seconds. Philip Vanderplog, played by Fraser, is a Western actor living in Japan, but struggling to get work and also struggling with loneliness. In desperation, he accepts a job at a rental family agency run by Shinji Tada, played by Hiro, playing stand-in roles in the real lives of strangers. Apparently, such agencies are a real thing in Japan.
We could be part of that.
Indeed, we could. Vanderplog is initially put off by the work, but soon realizes that he's actually helping people and he's really connecting with them. But when does it stop being a job and become real human connection? And is that fair on him and the people he's interacting with, some of whom don't know that he's actually an actor? Whilst raising some serious ethical and moral questions, this gentle family dramedy is really about finding the beauty in human connection. Fraser evokes just the right amount of pathos and empathy for his fellow man. He really does look like he's making it up as he's going along. A beautiful feel-good film, if slightly manipulative at times, Rental Family is well worth the investment.
Nice one. And now we've got the one that I'm looking forward to the most of all.
Yep, that's the one. Anaconda starring Jack Black of Minecraft. vomit fame. Paul Rudd from Clueless. Steve Zahn from Out of Sight. Literally, he was very prominent in the 90s, but seemed to have just disappeared, only for me to check IMDb to find out that he's been working steadily all along. And Tandy Newton from Crash. This one's directed by Tom Gormican, who made The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, starring Nicolas Cage. This is about four middle-aged friends struggling with midlife who decide to travel to the Amazon to make a reboot of their favourite film as... Were they kids, teenagers, or young adults? This film is pretty vague about their ages, but they end up getting in a whole lot more trouble than they bargained for as Murphy's Law prevails, and of course they end up being pursued by a very, very large reptile. Thankfully, we're back to something approaching vintage Jack Black mania. Of course, he has a lot of making up to do after Minecraft, and Paul Rudd being likeable as ever, who bounce off each other really well. Did the Anaconda franchise even need a reboot? Probably not, but the cast and a very meta self-aware parody of a screenplay lead to one of the silliest action films of the year. Look out for Ione Skye too.
No way.
Yep, she's in this because it was made in Australia. Anaconda will grip you and squeeze out plenty of laughs.
Oh, that is awesome stuff. Thank you so much, Michael Jones.
No, we've still got one more.
Oh, right. What? But wait, there's more.
The Housemaid, starring Amanda Seyfried from Mean Girls and Ted, Jean's girl Sydney Sweeney from Euphoria and Madam Web, and new stud in town, Brandon Sklenar from Drop and It Ends With Us. This one's directed by Paul Feig, a man usually associated with comedies like Bridesmaids and Spy. This one's based on a novel by Freda McFadden. Millie, played by Sweeney, is fresh out of jail and homeless when, by a miracle that can only happen in airport novels and Hollywood movies, she lands a job as a housemaid for Nina, played by Seyfried, and Andrew, played by Sklenar, and their seven-year-old daughter in a beautiful big house in New Jersey. Right from the start, Seyfried as Nina is dialing up the crazy, lying to and gaslighting Millie at every opportunity, spying on her and even threatening her. Oddly, Andrew seems to put up with this behaviour, seemingly so besotted with his wife he's blind to her obvious failings. What the hell is going on here? The Housemaid is high-octane, camp melodrama, one of those ridiculously so bad it's good thrillers, with all the elements to keep you watching. Seyfried ramping up the crazy, Sweeney ramping up the sexy, and Sklenar looking all hunky and sad. Elizabeth McGovern popping up as a cold hard bitch, and a plot that has more twists and turns than a bowl of spaghetti.
No snakes though?
No snakes, unfortunately. The Housemaid keeps the pot boiling and really cleans up.
This is awesome stuff. Thank you so much. What an absolutely massive edition of Movies with Michael. Get out and see a film today if you can. And Michael, do SER Breakfast, normally giving us movie reviews, but a very special edition today because you're going to give us your best and worst of 2025.
Yeah, I'm going to cram these in reasonably quickly. I've got a few favourite films of the year because people, by popular demand and sometimes by unpopular demand, I just inflict them on people. Favourite films of the year, they include A Complete Unknown.
Great.
A Bob Dylan biopic for obvious reasons. Great performance by Timothy Chalamet. Sinners, some original IP. Vampire action flick. It was just a cracker of a story. The Story of Suleiman. This was a low-budget thriller, but also a very human drama about a refugee living in Paris. Well worth checking out on streaming these days. One battle after another.
Oh,
this is just peak Sean Penn. How can you go past it? And also Benicio Del Toro in an excellent cameo. You should check it out. Nuremberg, for obvious reasons. Go, Russ, go, is all I'll say on that one. Familiar Touch, that's a heartbreaking drama. It's a very low-budget drama, but very sad, very touching film. F1, Brad Pitt oozing the charm.
Motor cars.
And the star quality. And Fast Cars. How could you not like that film? John Candy, I Like Me. This was my favourite documentary of the year.
Cool.
And I liked it because I like John Candy.
How could you not?
Begonia was just totally bizarre and totally fun, except for the ending bit, but I'll still give it a pass. And Black Bag rounds out my top 10 or 11. I'm not sure. I've lost count there. Just really cool and pretty sexy too.
Awesome. Now let's get to the most important part, your least essential worst films of 2025.
Yeah, some things that I think you should avoid. They're probably all on streaming now. And by the length of the straight, it would be a Minecraft movie as the worst film of 2025. I'm still angry about having to sit through this movie. It is just a piece of shit, and I will fight anyone anyone who disagrees with me on this, knowing full well that I would only have to fight 6 to 12-year-olds who would think that this was a good film. Die, My Love, If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You. They're good films, but they're two films about women going crazy and nobody helping them. And they were just real ordeals to get through. Yeah. And I just hated them. Like, great acting, but they were just real ordeals to watch. A Japanese film called Happy End. I was just happy when the film ended. It was really, really boring.
You lined yourself up for that one, Happy End.
Yeah. Christmas Karma. You'll get Whamageddoned before you realize it. And it's just pretty darn bad. A Working Man. Surprise, surprise. A film Sylvester Stallone had something to do with, this time as a producer and a writer. What have you done to Sylvester Stallone, Jason Statham, to have to star in this film? The Materialists. This was just really cynical and mean and nasty and anti-romance film that was just yuck. Clown in a Cornfield, making horror really, really boring. And finally, The Phoenician Scheme. Wes Anderson makes the same movie yet again. Of course, Wes Anderson films will probably want to fight me about that one too.
Yeah, I might have money on you in that one, mate.
And winding it up, a couple of guilty pleasures. Ooh. Final Destination Bloodlines, simply for the opening sequence, and The Surfer for serving up some vintage Nicolas Cage hysteria.
Excellent stuff. Thank you very much, Michael Jones, to SER Breakfast.
Pleasure.